Welcome to Live Well Long, where we deliver life-enhancing, empowering messages for body, mind, and spirit to those seeking to get the most out of life, who have a zest for learning and know that learning must be an ongoing activity to achieve a vibrant, thriving life. This is your host, Alexandra Van Horn. Stay tuned for another episode of Live Well Long. Hey everyone, this is Alexandra from Live Well Long, where we discuss all things possible to help us live well longer. And today we have a wonderful guest, Charlene Gorda Costanzo. She's an award-winning author, experiential event facilitator, speaker, wife, mother of two adult daughters, and a grandmother of twins. She holds a BA in philosophy from St. Bonaventure University and an MA in spiritual psychology from the University of Santa Monica. She loves to read, write, travel, swim, hike, dance. And if we lived closer together, she and I would be having fun. we like a lot of the same things. So this is great. We had an interview way back in the beginning of my podcast several years ago, and it was so great to reach out to you again and invite you back. And I know you've written several books. How many books altogether? About? Too many to count. Too numerous.
I know.
Awesome. Nine. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Beautiful. Now, the first book you wrote, The 12 Gifts of Birth, that was your first book in your 12 Gifts collection. It was really successful and it's still selling well after more than 20 years. What do you attribute that to? Any thoughts on that?
I didn't write the book. Okay. That's one thing. I had a dream. Okay. And the story, I woke up with this story of, that book is only 500 words. It's so simple. Uh-huh. And yet some people say simple yet profound, because it's not about birthing. It's the 12 gifts that you receive, you come into the world with for living well. But because I wrote it, there was so much passion, so much emotion in it, because I wrote it for my daughters. I didn't write it intending to publish it right away. But if I can give you the little background how I wrote it. My daughters were teenagers. They weren't home from school yet one day, and I'm like putting dishes away. I'm just doing stuff anyway. And I had this sudden, like almost partial life review. Like you're at the end of your life, you might have a life review. Well, this was just about being a mother. And I saw these scenes where they were little and they're going, mommy, mommy, and they're talking at the same time. And I'm trying to divide my attention while I'm stirring something, folding clothes or whatever. I was aware of times that I didn't give them quality listening. And I knew more then. I knew that love, unconditional love, was the most important thing. And anyway, I felt like, well, I did a pretty good job, but like, wow, now I'm ready. When they're, 16, 17 years old. Hey, I think I know how to really, I could do this better now.
And, can we rewind the clock, right?
So I really did see, one big thing I understood, all of this really comes into all of my books. What I want for my children, for all children. And that is that each child, you don't try to form them to fit in with whatever, but help them become their best self, who they truly are. I had no notion of that when I first had them, and I definitely did some things that I didn't like what my parents did. They never had to stand in the corner. I had to go stand in the corner, and that was big for me. I cried. But I remember standing there going, I'm never going to do this to my children. But but I really did try to make them good little girls, do the right thing, be, polite, be, which are all good things. But anyway, so I said that day, have I been a good mother? And my answer was yes, but. And I really ached, because one daughter, I especially felt that I didn't help her bloom into herself. So I wanted to give them something that made up for that and was guidance for the rest of their life. And I looked for things that didn't find it.
That right there, what you just said, I just want to really let that sink in for our listeners, because that's really beautiful. Because so many of us with our parenting, we may feel like, oh, I messed that up. If I had it to do again, and if I could only make it up to them, or, you know, and some, and like you say, it's like, you know, they're already grown. So this is beautiful that this is somehow making it up to them in some way. I think that's how you worded it.
You know, I go off on tangents. Just follow me. What you just said, a woman on a vacation I was on recently, I was telling her about the book, how this happened, and she teared, and she said, "You should write a book about that for mothers." She said, "I think a lot of us still feel like, oh, to some extent, a little bit or a lot, I could have been a better mother. Did I do this? Did I?" Especially if you're like a recovering perfectionist, you know, wanting to do everything just right. But anyway, I had a dream about this. So you see that I actually cried when I thought, oh, I really could have, I love them so much, I could have done a better job. And, but I had a dream, and I quickly wrote down this little, what I could remember of it, made a handmade book for them that I sewed. I drew pictures in.
Oh, that's sweet.
And it was only, and it's really a fable that is, I won't say a lot about the book now, because the question is, why was it successful? And it's because it was so, it didn't come from my head writing it. It was like through my heart and my gut and all of this yearning to, you know, what I want for my children. And after I did this, I thought, what this book says to what I wanted to say to them, what I wished I had been saying, whispering in their ears from the time they were babies, you know, telling them about what they have, their gifts for life. Yeah. And I thought, I think this is a book that many children could benefit from. I'm going to get this published. So partly it's successful because of how it originated. But then I feel such love for all children. You know, knowing that they matter, knowing that they're, you know, they really are gifted and talented, and they, their dreams make a difference. So then 10 years later, I published the book, formed a company, published it, went on, my husband and I got into a motorhome, went around the country, but it's successful now because that part was also driven with like a sense of mission. So it's
Can I interrupt for a second? So when you drove around the country, so you were basically, it was on a book tour, basically, like you were taking a book on the road and you were going to stop at different. So you said, what did it say? You visited schools, shelters, recovery centers, and this was of your own doing. You just said, let's check out that place. Let's do that. And you said, I have a book. And did you do presentations there, or how did that go?
Yeah. My husband planned a route, and then I started calling. I didn't have a, you know, a staff or a publisher, you know, funding it, as you said. It was a lot of work. And, but I would call a bookstore first in a town and see if I could do an event. Then bookstores were still healthier then. And then a school, you know, I would do some community things. Yeah. And then it grew, like some people started hearing about it. The book got some publicity right away. And then the fact that a man leaves his work, you know, we move out of a home, we're driving around the country. That was a story.
This wasn't just like, let's just lock the door and go on the road. This was a huge shift. Did you sell your house, or did you, and he quit his job?
At that time we were renting a house, but we like gave away furniture, sold things, did, you know, it was like, and our home is the RV. So funny thing with that was, when you're in Fargo, I had a great experience in so many towns, but Fargo is one of them. Then, you know, children would say, oh, where do you live? And I'd say, well, today, here, because we're parked in your town.
It was our house.
And I loved it. If the RV was parked where they could see it, they'd run over to the window and say, that's my home, you know? Many, many schools in almost every state, and second, third, or fourth grade, or sometimes it was high school kids. Sometimes it was an assembly of the whole school. But the great thing was, because I could read the book in 5 minutes, and then talk about it, it's powerful because an example of how that was, why the book is effective in getting a message across is this demonstrates it. I was invited to I don't know what it's called. It's a home for girls, teenage girls that are incarcerated.
Okay.
It's not called a prison, and I'm not sure the proper name, but so I read it and we talked about, well, actually before we even talked about it, I just got done reading it. And this one girl starts yelling at me, screaming at me. And she's going, "You got me, you got me." And she just was really angry. And we understood then it was because she listened. It went in, and then she wasn't ready for that. Like, people go and give these talks, you know, you got to get your life together. You have promise, you have this. When it's direct like that, you can shut them out and say, "Oh yeah, you know, BS or whatever. What does that lady know about my life or something?"
Right, right,
because
right.
It starts once upon a time, a long time ago. And the little girl in her listened, and her heart took it in. And then she let me, she was crying, I was crying, and we just hugged.
So beautiful.
And that's how it was with some in incarcerated places. You know, so many people just don't feel good enough.
Amen. Yeah. Well, so much. I had a conversation with someone yesterday in an interview about forgiveness. And I said, you know, whatever someone is doing, it's like, you know, it's, remember the old cassettes with the cassette player. It's like, you know, there's the player and there's the cassette. If you don't like what's coming out of it, you know, you would take out the cassette and put in the music you like. So there's a program running. And mm-hmm. everybody gets programmed based on our early childhood experiences, the culture we're in, you know, who knows, it can come from the teacher, all the programming goes in. And then with, if it was loving programming, great. If not, then people have a, you know, a rougher road ahead of them because they have to get through all that. Yeah. And transcend it. Yeah.
One thing I learned at in my studies at USM, University of Santa Monica, is that the thing is, the earliest memories, you know, and you probably know this, but, you know, we have our conscious memories, or a lot of those things are plugged in, but a lot of things happen before we really have words for them. You have these emotions and feel not good enough. Or so many children, I just saw recently where a child ran away from mother and almost ran into the street. And, you know, she grabbed her and she started yelling at her. And the one minute the child was happy running, you know, like, "I'm free. I'm a little child loving the world, loving today." And all of a sudden, like, you know, so some things are so well-meaning and we just accidentally, you don't know how then the child takes that in. But one is that even in the crib, you know, we're crying and we're used to mommy coming in, you get picked up and, but what if mommy, there are times mommy comes in, she's ready to pick you up, but then she just walks out. And anyway, someone gave this example. I thought it was a really good one. You don't know that the doorbell rang or the teapot's whistling or there's something in the oven or why mommy walked out, but it's, you know, for some children that can be.
Yeah, I don't matter.
Their little hearts or whatever. Anyway, there's a lot of confusion. Life is confusing, I think, and yet it's wonderful. And we, it helps if you learn early that you have the inner strength, you have hope within you, you have joy. How do we tap into these things?
Right.
But see, when I talk about it like that, it's easy to just kind of, yeah. We hear these words, they're on Christmas carols, they sell cars. I don't know. I went into a pharmacy recently and something had the word joy, big joy, buy. And it wasn't to buy a candy bar. It was, you know, something, clean your house with this and you're going to have joy, or, you know what I mean? There are so many things that kind of, I think we don't realize that these things we have in us. I feel as if it's like we all have a lot. We won the lottery. We have a ticket. It's in a pocket somewhere, or
we just don't even know. We just don't.
You don't even know that you have this treasure. We have this,
yeah,
that extremely valuable material in us.
Right, right. And unless somebody points it out from the get-go, or we have this inner knowing, some of us, you know, have a more inner knowing around it. But unless somebody points it out, if someone is, you know, talking rough to us in our childhood, we come away with low self-esteem or with a tough attitude, like nothing's going to hurt me, you know, and
yeah.
And it can take decades for us to excavate that and say, oh, I can be loving and helpful. And I'm a, you know, productive and a gift to the world, you know, but it's all the early programming that can slow that up for us, can slow up that process. Yeah. So when you were traveling, it was, what did you say, 1999 to 2000, I see you have a note here.
Yeah.
What surprised you the most? Like, what did you learn along the way when you were?
One thing that surprised me was we cannot make a judgment, and we have to be careful, like not judge a lot of people, things and all, but there were some inner city schools that were incredible, you know, that you could tell how the school felt and looked and how the children acted, the principal, the teacher, they were engaged, they were curious. The children all had like bright eyes and like, there was excitement for learning, for everything. And not always. I mean, I went into some and I'm in the office, I'm just volunteering there, you know, I'm ignored. There's people waiting and, you know what I mean? Whether it's it could be any kind of business, anything. There are people who have good, you know, connection with people and sometimes not. But my point with that is that people sometimes think, well, the school in the suburbs is probably the better school. And sometimes I went into a private school and sometimes I had that same thing, engaged. Oh, you're here. Yeah. I want to tell you about my talent. And kids are like excited still about life, and some apathy, like the teacher, people just, it's drudgery. School is drudgery. So that's the thing we have to overcome, I think, in anything, our work, our daily life, home, like big sticks, live well, long. We have to be excited, want to live well, long, and realize, you know, I may only have today. So.
Right. And, you know, to your point, I've done some substitute teaching along the way, as well as some interim teaching for people who are on maternity leave, and then also in a middle school full time. But during my substitute teaching years, I could walk in, you know, you always go into the office to check in and find out what the assignment is for the day. I could immediately pick up on the energy of the school right in that front office. If the head secretary is kind of grumbly, you know, right away. And it's like, it permeates through the entire school. Now, whether it's because the principal is that way and, you know, and they just, whatever. But I know exactly what you will. In some schools, you'd walk into the office, oh, hi, Ms. Van Horn, blah, 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 you know, and totally different. And so I get exactly what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah. And it permeates the entire school.
Some places there was a welcome big thing on the front door, you know, or along the halls. Thank you for coming. And stories they made, they read the book before I came. They did.
Oh, nice.
Anyway, there were many different scenarios, I guess, and the energy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, what kids said, what some people said. I don't know if it surprised me. They're just so heartwarming and true, you know, what children know. I'll give one example. By the way, when we were doing this, it was right after Columbine that year, you know, that tragedy happened. And we were at a school, it was early in the tour. I lived in Arizona then, so we were doing Western states. And in this school in Denver, well, where Columbine was.
Yeah. It was in Littleton, Colorado.
Littleton, yeah, right. The school year was just right. Anyway, I read the 12 gifts, their strength, beauty, and a little thing about them, kind of a wish, like as if a fairy godmother is saying, may you do this with each gift. But anyway, one of them is compassion. So there's, you know, 12. And I would ask the children, well, which one do you think, did you have one that you felt like, oh, I love that one, or I need that one, or do I have, which stood out the most or seemed most important? And it happened a number of times where children would, they wouldn't even remember the word compassion, but they would say the kindness one. The kindness one. I get chills when I think that children will say the most important,
right?
Your talent, your joy, your hope, your love, even, you know, I mean, everyone was mentioned. Everyone kind of got some votes, all the gifts, but the kindness one was, stood out as children recognizing that.
Yeah. I watched a video the other day in one of the courses I'm in, and it was a mother of one of the boys that was shot in Sandy Hook, Connecticut, when the little children were shot. And she was saying how she realized that and she even said the shooter's name, which I don't remember recall at the moment, but she was saying, you know, he was programmed in a certain way. So she had compassion for him, even though this horrendous event and she lost her child, but she got that, you know, he just had the wrong programming that didn't teach him, give him the love, the coping skills that he needed. Yeah. That had him made those choices. Yeah.
Yeah. Individual anecdotes, what people say, stories, things from film. I have this collection, I call them touchstones. And I send out something, today's touchstone every day, but because a touchstone is, you know, you hear it, see it, and it brings you right to that place of that, the meaning of that, whatever. But there's a film, Amish Grace, a book too. And it's about the girls being shot in a Little Nichols, I think, Pennsylvania, some an Amish schoolhouse, 10 girls, I believe it was, were killed. But in the movie, what this all is about is not so much the violence, all that, it's about forgiveness.
Yeah.
And about, not everyone does it perfectly, but the Amish really believe you must forgive. We must, you know, you choose, and it's done in a like loving way. But in the movie, this little girl, her older sister was killed, and she said, I will not, I always hate that man. I hate that, you know, and she was little. And the father, it's so beautiful. He doesn't scold her, try to push her, say you shouldn't hate any. He gives her love, unconditional love, accepts her experiences at the moment, and says, you know, if you want to do that, hold on to it. You know, you can, that's your choice. But he said, but know this, hate is a really big, hungry, it's got this big voracious appetite, and it will eat your whole heart until there's no room for love. I think about that a lot, and it's said better than that, but I think about how much anger, the contentiousness in our culture now, and you know, I see a lot of this, I don't know, we need the kindness and the love, because the heart, once you start finding everything wrong, well, this is wrong, the politicians are all crooked, they're this, that, you know.
Yeah, oh, you bring your energy right down.
Right down. And we are not going to be a strong people, or if that's how we are, is hating, pointing the finger. You know, and it may sound like Pollyanna or something, but I think we have to start seeing things differently and saying, oh, I see you did, I love that about you. You know, I admire that about you.
Look for the good. Yeah.
Look for the good.
Yeah. I'm sure you've probably heard it too. The expression, you know, catch them doing something right instead of catching them doing something wrong. You know, whether it's your kids or your spouse or anyone, catch them doing something right. Yeah. And acknowledge it. That's so cool.
Years ago, my husband and I went to something called Marriage Encounter. It was a long time ago. We've been married 53 years, but they had several kinds of weekends, and we even volunteered for them. But anyway, one thing that they suggested you do every day was, yet you wrote a little letter to each other, even if you didn't do that, is to tell your spouse, but I think to tell your child, tell everyone, your most endearing quality today is this. This is what I found really.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That I love this about you today. Imagine if we would do that. And what I found was that I I got distracted.
Are you hearing that? Are you hearing that chime? Is that are you hearing the chime? That
yeah. Came? Does that mean we're like should be done?
No, we're fine. We're fine. It's just I got a notification on my phone.
Oh, okay. But some days I would be like, oh, which one? Oh, he did that. This was so nice. This, oh, and I'd be writing and you're supposed to say your most endearing. Mm-hmm. And but I had lots of them to pick from. And some days
you had a dig.
What? Well, maybe there was that. Okay. Yeah.
You can always call. He's got a nice smile. You can always throw that one in.
Yeah,
there.
Right.
I love your smile.
I like his smile. Yeah. But that, I love little things that are easy to do and they can make a huge difference in your life.
Yeah, that's a beautiful takeaway for our listeners. It's like, every day, just find something you like or you can appreciate about your partner, your spouse, or anyone and in your life that you want to commend and you want to really enhance, help that relationship to stay strong. Just keep acknowledging instead of, you didn't take out the garbage or you didn't squeeze the toothpaste or put the toilet seat down or whatever the complaints might be, right?
Yeah. And it's powerful for both the giver and the receiver. Mm-hmm. I felt so good offering that. Yeah. It always brought me to a good place. And then, ooh, what's he going to tell me? What is? So I like to do that with my children, grandchildren, and
that's beautiful. Yeah.
At people in the grocery store, honestly, yes. You don't have to just say, oh, I like your smile. Oh, I like your name. Oh, yeah. I like your oh, I love your glasses.
Right?
Oh, thank you. I don't know. It's kindness, courtesy, compliments. Right. I think if many of us did that, mm-hmm. We look for peace, we look for joy. There could be this, we hit a critical mass. And the world is different. Our country's different, and
right. Cultivating kindness. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Wow. And I heard you say that you've experienced several miracles in your life. Do you want to share about that?
Well, the one that just came to mind, I do feel that being here is a miracle because I had, at the end of that tour, I was in Alaska and I just on the way to a Boys and Girls Club to do a presentation there. And I just kind of went like that on my throat and I felt this hard lump and I knew that it just, knew it was not good. And anyway, it turned out I had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma advanced. Stage 4, it was in my my neck, my throat, my abdomen, and my bone marrow. And the form that I had, it wasn't fast growing, it was slow growing, but there was no cure. So when you hear there's no cure and the average, I guess, life expectancy or something after that, which I think you should never be giving people because then sometimes you take that on. But it was like 7 years or something. But I heard though then that at least one person has achieved a cure from every kind of cancer. And when I heard that, I was like, oh, if one person can do it, I can too. That is not, I can actually release this. I just started to believe that. I did everything. I used aromatherapy, beauty, nature, affirmations, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual things besides chemotherapy. My doctor, the oncologist, said, boy, you really have a positive attitude. And, he said, it's still going to be in your bone marrow. Like, I don't know why he said that, because it was going to be hard to get. Then I was, oh, boy, you've really given me a challenge now. I was talking to my bone marrow every day. Bones, all my cells. I would sing this song, every little cell in my body is happy. I got a treatment, I used like sort of a Passover, something that harkens to the Passover. Okay. I would tell my healthy cells to protect themselves. Like something's coming over your house. Something is really strong, in, you know, to destroy some harmful cells.
Prepare for a battle.
Misguided. So yeah, so it was kind of like put a, you know, mark on your doorway and let it pit, it go over. And but then I would say, okay, I know that all you cancer cells have heard that too. I mean, I started joking with my body and saying, okay, but they're after you. And it says, you have a choice. You somehow got misguided, you know, and you have to either leave, you're not welcome here, or if you can somehow change back, you know.
Be normal again, stay. Be good.
Right. But anyway, I did a lot of things for that. And anyway, at the end of it, even my bone marrow said no evidence of cancer. I don't know if it was a miracle, but that was.
I would say.
Yeah. And well, I got, if anyone wants to hear about more of them, because I have some big ones, right. Is one of my books. Now, if I hold it up, it'll probably be backwards. Huh?
It's good.
Oh, Touchstones. Stories for Living the 12 Gifts. I have stories like that in here that either for me or for other people, something happened. In fact, one of the stories is about a woman who had, she's still alive. She had pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. And it was back when I was diagnosed, and she had a lot of treatments and all, but she did all, her thing is joy. You just live in joy every day. I don't know if she's.
Love it. I love it.
She survived. They're not all health things either. There's all kinds of stories in that, but
all kinds of overcoming. Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Wow. And now your second book is about using the 12 gifts to heal. And you wrote it while facing advanced lymphoma, which is what you were sharing about. Mm-hmm. What's the main takeaway from that book?
That, and a lot of people know this, but I think we forget. It's our body that has the healing power. You know, it's, yes, the drug helps, all the things that I did, but if you empower the body, the cells that are, can correct things. Life wants to survive, you know, you see after a storm, whatever I've seen, and that's in my garden book too, but, trees that even if you have to cut part of them down, all of a sudden there's new growth. And so anyway, the main thing, see this, it's another fable. And in it, a young woman who is troubled and has something she can't release goes to see this mater, a woman who's a wise woman in this place. I won't say the whole story. Describing it would take longer than that's 500 words also. But the woman takes her to see different things. And the young woman said, because she's saying, take me to the healing place. You know, like there's this place you go and the miracles happen or something.
Right.
And the young woman says, is this it? I feel heartened here. I feel strong here. And then the woman says, all these places can help you heal, but the healing place is in you, you know? Mm-hmm. And then she gives her 12, wishes, and the young woman heals, and she becomes like a guy, an elder, a wise elder that does that for other people. And what I like about the book, I have some of my books here, I don't have that one, but she repeats what the woman, the older woman said, into the morning breeze, and it's believed that that is carried like on the wind and on the around the earth, giving these healing wishes or blessings for all people who seek healing.
Oh, I like it.
But that's it. It's always about encouragement, using your hope, using your knowing you're strong enough. Use your courage.
Right.
You know, we all have. You don't have to be jumping into a river to save someone or going into a burning building. You know, sometimes courage, we need courage sometimes to get up and go into the day. You know, sometimes we have stretches in life. It's important to know you have it for whatever we're facing and for healing, whether it's a physical thing or a life challenge that is just feels like you're doomed, you know, to know you're not, we're not, and to reach in and to all your gifts. And then really we can often transformations happen and we come out of something greater than before.
Right. It's true. It's true. Absolutely. You know, there's a saying that, you know, consider that the universe or God, whatever term you want to use, is conspiring in your favor. You know, now that may take a stretch of the imagination for some people, you know, like for, or for some events, like no way God is in this situation, you know. There can be a hidden gift when we go through it. And, you know, losing my husband, I became much stronger afterwards. Definitely wasn't my preference, but, you know, we do become stronger after we go through some type of ordeal.
Yeah. I think a critical thing for that, because I know I hear some people saying like, why did God give me this? Or why? I don't think we're given, you know, the things that happen. I think it's our choices or, you know, we have free will and we have, and things happen, but where God is, where the energy, the love, whatever, the higher power, the creator, the, what keeps the sustainer is that's what's there always. Right. To help us through it, to have the advancement, to have the aha. I mean, I even saw that in, after 9/11, you know, you could focus on the horror and there was awful, you know, horror. But what moved me so much was, you didn't see a lot of this, but I saw some in the following days. People in other countries crying, keening, you know, wailing, doing things, praying, for caring about America, you know, and what this happened. And that gives me so much hope. And that's where I see, that's where our beauty, one of the gifts is beauty. The beauty in each person is, you know, we all have those things, right. But sometimes you just don't bring them out. But boy, when it comes out, and I love those women or those people, the men who might've been meant to, and you realize, you know, we're one with them.
Right. Absolutely. I remember also like executives from some of the, you know, the surviving executives, however, whoever they were, embracing each other, you know, which, you know, tender, very tender moments, you know, which speaks to the resiliency of the human heart.
And the helpfulness, the showing up to help. And we see that after natural disasters, the tsunamis, and you see this. So, you know, it's right there in humanity. You know, there's selfishness, greed, some other things, but it's like a misguided cancer cell.
Right. You know,
that when people get whatever their values are, but I feel that even if you don't see it in someone, like hardly at all, it's in there. I might have a hard time coming up with the most endearing quality or something like that.
But that's when we revert back to, oh, you have a nice smile.
Oh, back to that thought though. When I like, when someone says, oh, wow, you're so sensitive or this or that or whatever, whenever I receive a compliment, because someone did this to me. So I like to repeat it to say, if you saw that, if you see that in me, that's a reflection of you. You know, so if you see courage in me, I usually say it better than that. I don't, whatever you see in me is a reflection of you. Right. And I go, oh yes, you wouldn't see talent or kindness or whatever. It's in you. It's like we're magic mirrors for each other, you know?
Like that magic.
Now the bad thing of that is if you see something you don't like, uh-oh.
Yeah. That's really, how am I like that person? How am I?
That part.
You're nasty or whatever the case may be. Yeah. Wow.
I have a cute story, a touchstone about the universe, you know, that lesson of is on our side. I use this little anecdote to then lead into that, you know, to say, anyway, a little young mosquito goes out flying for the first time. And when he comes back, his father says, so how did it go, son? And he said, great. Everybody was clapping for me. But the thing is, the little guy, you know, was that believing that the universe is
applauding him. Yeah.
You know, there's a problem with that, though, because the truth is, they're trying
to wipe him out.
I have to use a different touchstone for that.
But that's a cute story, though.
It is.
Yeah. Well, I also, like, I meet so many people, and I noticed that some people I'll take it just down to my husband. When he was an only child, had a lot of love and attention, first grandchild in his family and the only child. So he got a lot of, and a warm, caring family. So he got a lot of, you know, back rubs and just built up his confidence, you know? And so he immediately, whenever he met somebody new, he already liked them, you know? He already liked them. He didn't like need to be proven. Now, I was raised in a different way. It was a rougher upbringing. Let's just call it that, you know? And whenever I met somebody, I was more like cautious. It's kind of like, you know, guilty until proven innocent. In his case, they were innocent until proven guilty, you know? So I just had to be on the high watch to see, okay, how much can I trust this person, you know? And, but it's early childhood experience that I believe just, you know, created that mindset of this is, you know, I'm going to come from caution, or I'm just going to come from, oh, I love you, you know?
And it's, I was going to say, it's not easy to change that, but I don't want to affirm that, say.
Right. Exactly.
You know, like maybe up until now in the universe, it was hard to change that.
Right.
But maybe going forward, it's going to get easier for us to say, we're just going to see things.
Yeah. Or like with every new person, like if you once I have realized that, it makes a difference. Like I can lean into someone before where I wouldn't. And also the flip side is that also children that come through challenging situations develop an intuition too about when they walk into a room, they know if there's going to be, you know, some tension in that room, they can feel it. So the flip side is we're also more intuitive when we've had that, you know, so that it's got, you know, it's got its qualities too.
I see that. Yeah. With the caution comes a readiness to read the person.
You walk into a room and you can feel the energy right away. Oh, it feels good in here. It's like, somebody's not happy in here. I feel it, you know?
And the more we pay attention to that, the more we become more adept at it.
Yeah. And it's helpful too, because once we have that, then we know, you know, to either how to behave or how to act, or to come with even more kindness and syrupy sugariness to like soothe the conversation is in there, you know?
I like to believe that if I worked with even the toughest, hardened, whatever, somebody that looks at me and doesn't like something, you know, that if we sit and talk, and you look in each other's eyes and you open your heart and you find common ground, that's it. Then there's, you know, you can cozy up to somebody and feel like, hey, I like you. You know, we're a lot alike.
Right.
You know, that one reason why I guess I have believed that the universe is helpful, you know, that there's always help. I had an experience from my first book. I was driving to a photo shoot. The book is richly illustrated, The 12 Gifts of Birth. And I lived in Phoenix then, and I'm driving pretty fast. I'm going along with the flow of traffic, like 10, 15 miles over the speed limit, you know, and I'm in a middle lane, and I hear exact words, but not with my ears, like in my body. I heard, move over to the far right lane now.
Wow. I love it.
Yeah. And I was... okay, you know, I didn't say anything. I just took, you know, I followed that. I went over, and as soon as I got to the furthest lane near the shoulder, like about a minute later, I got a flat tire and the car wobbled, you know, kind of lost control. And I was able to just pull on.
Right.
It's amazing because I was able to, I had even a wide area. It was right after an exit. So there was like this perfect, safe little island for me to go on. And I was just like, whoa, what was that? I mean, I understood it, what happened, but there was a second part just then, like trucks, big trucks came vroom, vroom, speeding by. And my little car, you know, I shook and I thought, if I would have been dead, you know, that happened and I couldn't get over and I'm trying to, what do you do? You know, when your car, suddenly you're slowed down. And I thought it wouldn't have been just me. There would have been a pileup.
Right.
So that's why I think now sometimes people say, well, why doesn't it happen all the time? I got a lot more questions than answers about life.
Right. It's but a I mystery. Believe that's why it's a mystery, right?
Yeah, it is. But
yeah, it's so true. It's so true. Yeah, that's, I have a similar, not the same thing, but years ago, way back, early life, not early life, but my 20s, I was working at a lab, midnight shift. And it was a Sunday night. I mean, that was to me the worst time. I was the only one in the building going in to run these machines that did blood samples, you know, testing. And it was snowing and I'm driving and the snow was like driving at me. And all of a sudden I'm behind, this is up New Jersey, and I'm behind one of those big sanding trucks, you know, and it's throwing sand or salt. But I didn't see it like in time to really slow down and not hit it. So it was just like, I hit the brakes and then my car just went right into the shoulder. And I was like, fine. I was like, wow, how did that happen? You know, it was just like, it was just perfect, you know? And I was like, this is cool. Okay. I'll take that. I still can see it in my mind's eye. Like it was too close for me to stop, but I was able to.
And the fact, yeah.
And I felt like my, I was guided in that moment to get right into the shoulder. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it happens more than we realize.
Yeah.
You know, we've all heard that expression. Well, many of us have heard this living here as Earth School, you know, and we're here to heal, to learn, there are life lessons. Well, what I love is one time someone in Sedona, I lived there for a while, a woman said, not only is this Earth School, this is the Harvard of the universe, and it's hard. And you wanted to get in here. Here you are. You know, I got into Harvard.
Harvard of the universe. I like that.
It's the Harvard of the universe. So I don't know. I like the, you know, the point, the suggestion that it makes was like, yeah, what'd you expect?
Right.
Just
right.
Do your work. Do the work. And you know, I had these touchstones that I write every day. They're on Facebook, today's touchstone. And I haven't, if you go to my website, charlenecostanzo.com, you can sign up to receive them. And what I wanted to say was, so today's was about keeping peace. I thought I printed it somewhere.
Yeah.
It talks about, oh darn, you should see my desk.
I'm gonna read it to
everything
you.
Has a quote, and then a reflection. And sometimes they're real short and a little longer, but it was from Psalms. Occasionally, right. I use all different sources. It was may there be peace within your walls. Mm-hmm. And so it's about, first of all, just the wish that in your home and wherever you go, even in the walls of this, every cell in your body, that there is peace and well-being. And then it goes on something about the way to spread peace, keep peace within ourselves is to, when we're in situations, sometimes people feel, well, what's me? One little person, how can I make a difference in the world? But each one of us, one by one by one, it adds up. So, and we only have ourselves to control, but it was, you know, about keeping peace. So this morning I won't describe the incident, but I had an encounter that was with someone who was not at all peaceful, and but it was out of hurting, and there was anger and ickiness. And very often our response, response, the first tendency is often to do the same thing, you know, it triggers that same. And I thought, oh, what I just wrote. is to approach like, okay, I got to walk my talk here. Yeah, I'm going to try my best. Yeah, and to let that go and just say, how do I be in the situation with equanimity? Just be like, right, you know, water, be calm and not even try to fix it or react. Just be present and let it be. And then, maybe just say something nice, or if it's a close person, say, how can I be supportive? Is there something I can do?
Right.
Certainly not something like, what you should do, that. but anyway, that is, that happens a lot with my touchstones. I give these little things out about, this is maybe a way to approach that. And I get tested a lot.
right. Yep.
Well, they say you write what you tested. Oh, another little helpful thing, like the most endearing quality is when someone says something that is a little bit jarring, we don't agree, or maybe it triggers something in us, simply say, before saying anything, like, well, that's a stupid idea, or, just say, is so powerful. It's kind of like ohm,
because you don't have to react, and they know you haven't bought it necessarily because you're pondering it.
Exactly. But taking that moment, I think for the person, if you say that, it does give you that little pause, makes space, I think, to maybe listen. But it also is saying to the other person, I'm thinking about it. I'm not jumping down your throat or trying.
Right.
So anyway,
totally on board either.
you don't know. It can go a lot of directions from that. But I consider that like your most endearing quality. Using can save you a lot of arguments.
I like that.
There you go.
Now, if I start going around through life going, people are going to be, what's up with her?
Well, it can sound.
She's not giving us her opinion anymore. She's just hooting.
Alexandra, the way you sounded that, I got a different kind of meaning. Like, not like, I'm considering that. It's more like,
Oh, that was a judgmental Okay.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to have to practice my.
There's a tone. There's a right tone.
It has to be more uplifting.
Yeah, with a smile.
I love it. Oh gosh, so much fun, really. What else? Yeah, you mentioned the word talentry something about. I've heard you use that. What does that mean exactly? Why do you use talentry instead of talent?
Because among the things I learned on that trip I guess we see a lot in life, when a person is asked about their talent or they think about talent, it's very often limited to athletics, academics, and artistry, So if someone for kids, like if they're not really excel in school, or in a sport, or they feel they don't draw or sing, whatever. And I've heard, I heard only one child say, I don't have talent. She was like that woman who was yelling, I got her. Another really kind thing I saw in schools was that asking children, what is your talent? And if someone was hesitating, children would wait and then they'd say, you know what you're good at? Remember that time you helped me tie my shoe? Or, I see a lot of this helpfulness, And, but I think talentry, to me, one of the gifts of the 12 gifts is the gift of talent. And to me, that means everything that you love to do, your ideals, your dreams. It's not just what you excel at. It's if you're a really good listener, some people can pick up, the vibration in a room. Or my husband's really good at, he can be in a big room and sense somebody in a corner and then notice somebody is standing there alone and feels real timid, or they're hurting, they need something. And anyway, that's one of his part of his talent tree. So I like to use a tree actually, like in a classroom or a workshop. And then you put them on branches, all the things you care about that you might want to do. And it's your talent tree.
I like that a lot. Very cool. You know, I had a conversation this week with two of my grandsons, and we were talking about being a teacher, being a student. And I said, well, you know, we are all like teachers and students. And my grandson, he's six. He can tell you anything about any dinosaur, whether it's an omnivore, an herbivore, carnivore, you know, he knows all these. And I said, well, like, for example, Luke, if I want to learn about dinosaurs, you're my teacher. I mean, I'm going to ask you because I know you know a lot, you know, and he kind of like took that in. And then my younger grandson, he's all about Paw Patrol. And I said, and Brady, if I want to know about Paw Patrol, you're my Paw Patrol teacher because he knows all about Paw Patrol, you know, and they both like that. I'm like, yeah, we can be a teacher and a student, you know.
As oh,
yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah. And that's the kind of thing. Oh, I call all of those things love bricks in a child's foundation.
I love that.
When our grandchildren, they're 12 now, boy and a girl twins, but whenever they'd be, you know, babies and toddlers and whatever we did, be at our house for the afternoon and then go home and go, we put more love bricks in their foundation. And they may not even remember some of the things, but they're in there, you know. That's a great love brick.
I like that. A love brick. I like that word.
Wow. Well, I like that too. I'm going to use that with my grandchildren. Oh, you were my teacher with, yeah.
Whatever their favorite thing is. Yeah. Wow.
You know what? All the children are our teachers with technology, with, you know, figuring out things on your phone. And
absolutely. You want to learn about technology? Ask a young person, right? Wow.
Yeah.
I'm just looking to see. So how can people reach you if they want to reach you?
The best way is through my website. Mm-hmm. And it's myname.com. Charlene, I don't use the Gorda, my middle name, just Charlene Costanzo.
Right. Okay, great. We'll get the show notes.
And there's contact. You can sign up. You know, there are blogs. You can also feel like you're visiting Sanibel Island going there because I have a lot of pictures. If I have time to just mention my newest book, most recent, is The 12 Gifts from the Garden. And it's about nature, how nature reflects the gifts to us, especially strength. Mm-hmm. But in that book, I have nature, like the talent, trying to think of the name, the shampoo ginger. You can wash your hair with it. You can do, you know, plants have, there's so many more things that we can eat or they're healing or they demonstrate things. So anyway, that book is about that. And Sanibel, you know, I wrote it in a garden there. And after Hurricane Ian, much of the vegetation, the island is just gone. So it's a way to see what was and what will be again. Probably it'll take time to come back.
Yeah, it'll regenerate.
CharleneCostanzo.com.
Great. Awesome. And they can get your touchstones, they can get your emails if they, is there a place for them to sign up?
Yeah, you sign up. I send them out every day. You get it early in the morning. And then, but if you don't want emails, because we get too many emails. If on Facebook, it's called Today's Touchstone.
Oh, that's the group called Today's Touchstone. It's your Facebook group. Beautiful. This has been so much fun. You're amazing and so prolific. 9 books and your trip around the country and all of the healing work you've done with young people and everywhere you went. It's just beautiful. Thank you so much.
Hey, whatever you see in me is a reflection of you.
Oh, thank you.
And what I see in you,
thank you.
I see right.
Oh. Right back at you, right?
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, thank you. It's always great connecting. Awesome. You have an awesome day.
Thank you. You too.
Thank
Thank you for listening. This is Alexandra with Live Well Long. Be sure to hit subscribe so you don't miss any of our important episodes. We want to be sure that you get everything you can to do your best to live well long. Feel free to reach out to me at alex@avhcoaching.com. And remember to take good care of yourself so that you live well long. Talk with you soon. Bye. Hey, it's Alexandra. One more thing. Would you please share this on Facebook, Twitter, send an email to your friends? Just hit the share link and pick a way to share it. I would love it. Thank you so much. Bye.